Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome. This is episode 295 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am Sean Penrod, your host. So happy you are joining us today for another fantastic interview with one of Magic's best and brightest players in the world. That's right. Each and every week, we bring you the stories of those who have risen to the top. Players who were just like you at one point, striving and struggling to make their way in Magic, and they finally broke through onto the Pro Tour, normally by making top 8 of a Grand Prix and then playing their hearts out at that level. So we have a great guest lined up today, but before we dive into the interview, I want to say thank you so much to you, the listeners, for tuning in each and every week. Without you, I would not do the show, quite honestly. And then, of course, I want to say thank you specifically to the patrons, because without the patrons, the show would not happen. It would not be possible. So thank you so much, patrons, for keeping the show going. I really, really appreciate it. It means the world to me. Your support in helping cover all the ins and outs and back end stuff that makes a podcast go. Thank you so much. And also thank you to Paragon City Games for supporting the show by providing prize support for our patron giveaways and for our Prodigy Sealed Leagues that we do once a set. And the last thing I want to mention before we dive into the interview is, if you haven't shared your opinion with me yet, I encourage you to go to mtgpro2.com/opinion and share with me your thoughts on one simple question. That is, when it comes to qualifying for the Pro Tour, what is the single biggest challenge, frustration, or obstacle that you are facing? I really want to know what's holding you back, in your opinion. What are you bumping up against? What do you wish you could do better? Where do you see your shortcomings are? This one question, when it comes to qualifying for the Pro Tour, what is your single biggest challenge, frustration, or problem that you're facing, will really help me dial in the content specifically for you. I really want to put out good, actionable content, things that will actually help you improve as a Magic player. We have this awesome opportunity to talk to the best players in the world, and I want to make sure that we're focusing in on the things that matter to you. So not only will it help guide the content of the podcast, it'll also help guide the newsletter content, what we put on the website, and any other programs or products or offerings that we have coming out in the future. So please, all you serious grinders out there, go to mtgpro2.com/opinion. That's mtgpro2.com/opinion, and share your opinion with me on this one topic. When it comes to qualifying for the Pro Tour, what's the single biggest challenge, frustration, or obstacle you are facing? So thank you again so much for tuning in. Now, without further ado, we have a fantastic guest lined up for you. So let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest recently made his first top 8 at Grand Prix Barcelona 2018, playing Boros Burn. Coming to us from Godalming, UK, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Nick Waugh. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Sean. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience to take the game to the next level?
Yeah, let's do it.
Excellent. Now, prodigies, if you want to connect with Nick, you can find him online on Twitter. He's at Nick Yeah Man on Twitter there. And yeah, you can reach out, say thanks for being on the show, ask one question, and yeah, that's how you can connect with him. So, Nick, we want to learn about you outside of Magic, if such a thing exists. So are you a student? Are you working? Is Magic all you do? Tell us what you have going on over there in Godalming.
Sure. So, yeah, I'm a business development manager for a small software firm. So that's all the sales, all the marketing, bit of project management. So, varied role. It's kind of fun.
I like that, man. Business is my bread and butter. So I love hearing other business folk who get to do that for a living. That's cool.
Nice.
Very cool. And then as far as like your upbringing and whatnot, you born and raised in Godalming?
Town just a couple of stops away. So Guildford, slightly larger, 5 miles down the road. Born and raised.
Cool. And have you been gaming all your life? Was it like a family thing growing up, or is that something you ventured off on your own to do as you got older?
Yeah, so kind of my own thing, really. Always been into sports, video games, kind of got into card games with the Pokemon TCG in the late 90s. Made the transition to Magic kind of off the back of that, really.
Cool. So, I mean, that's a perfect segue into, you know, what we would love to hear is your backstory, you know, the origin story of our heroes here. And tell us the story. We want to be right there with you. And the first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards.
Okay. So I'm on the school French trip 2001. I'm 12 years old. We're in this little dorm, and these kids, the year above us, they pull out these cards. You know, obviously, this is like invasion block or something. And they look great. They look awesome. You know, they teach us how to play, the younger kids. And that's awesome. Great. Love it. Let's go out. Let's buy a booster pack. We're in France. We buy some packs of Apocalypse. They're all in French. We don't know what the hell is going on. But they got power. They got toughness. They got a mana cost. That's all we need.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So on a school trip to France, yeah, that's the first time you ever learned about it. That's really, yeah. And so Apocalypse was your first, or sorry, Invasion was your first set?
I think Apocalypse was just out then. And obviously 7th edition was not far behind, which was good for a beginning player. And then all of Odyssey block, I guess.
Cool. So what would you consider to be your first set?
Probably 7th edition is the first set I kind of dived into as a starter set. And then Odyssey is the first, you know, whole proper level block that I got involved with, I think.
Cool. So coming in on 7th edition, more or less. And what's been your favorite set?
Well, I got fond memories of those two, 7th Ed and Odyssey. I've liked a lot of them. I like some, you know, I'm a pro core set guy. I like the core sets. I like, you know, just good times around sort of RTR, Theros, Khans. You know, I'll take it as it comes. I like them all.
Love it. Do you have a favorite card?
Well, it's got to be Eidolon on the Great Revel now, surely.
Eidolon on the Great Revel?
Yeah, I mean, Lightning Bolt's classic as well. Well, that's an easy answer.
So for those of us who don't know, what is Eidolon of the Great Rebel? Why do you like it? And what does it do? And why do you like it?
Okay, so it is a 2-drop for double red, a 2/2. And it says whenever either player casts a spell with CMC 3 or less, that player takes 2 damage. So in a format like Modern, where 90% of the spells are 3 or less, that's going to be dinging your opponent anytime they want to cast a spell. And, it's going to ping you 2, but you don't care so much when they're on a lower life total. So, you know, just restricts the game, tightens their options, makes things really interesting.
Yes, it does. Man, I've been on the other side of the table from that bad boy many times. So that's good. Yes. That's good stuff. Very cool. Mm. Very cool. And I love how when you first got in the game, you mentioned that you bought some French cards and you didn't know what they did. But hey, power, toughness, converted mana cost, and you're good to go. That's fun.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's always fun to hear, you know, those stories from early on. That, hey, even people who could read the cards, they still got them wrong. And it's not like you're any worse off than anybody else.
Exactly. Cool.
So from that time, you know, obviously to now, you've had a growth and some experience. And when was it that you started taking Magic more seriously or becoming a little bit more competitive?
Yeah. So I took the first few years, I just played casually. And then I took a long step away from the game for about 5 years for really all of my late teens. Then came back sort of university age, maybe 21, something like that. And, you know, started playing casually, you know, monthly, not commander, but just, you know, bring your deck and play 4-player. And then started going up to FNM and just going from there, really. I think it really coincided quite well in terms of being more competitive right around when PPTQs became a thing. Mm-hmm. So that is basically Khan's block. I'd just been to my first Grand Prix, and there was this new PPTQ system instead of the old PTQ system. And those two kind of things both happened in around 2014, so 4 years ago now. And here we are now, just GP Top 8 on.
Nice, love it. And so when you started going to more of these events and becoming more serious about Magic, what was a challenge that you faced, an early struggle that you eventually overcame?
Well, I think, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think some of the challenges you face now are this, you know, we're in the information age. The internet can give you anything you want immediately. But also, you know, we can play Magic online and soon we'll be able to play Arena. And it's, you know, I work full time. I'm trying to keep up with these guys, you know, these Matthew Folkses and so on, who are playing all day whenever they want. And, you know, they can put in 100 hours testing a week. I might be able to put in 5 or 10.
Right.
So I think for me, and this is still a challenge, it's making best use of time to prepare and share information and make sure you go into any tournament as well prepared as you can be, I think.
So that's a great point. And there are thousands of people who are like you, you know, who are in a similar situation. There are prodigies listening who, you know, they have other things in life, but they also want to play Magic and they want to do well. They want to go to Grand Prix and do well, like you have and stuff like that. So how have you done that? How have you overcome that challenge? So you recognize, okay, there's competing interests in our lives, but Magic is something I want to do. What do you do, Nick, to kind of, you know, get the time in and make that time?
Sure. So, I mean, recently, last year or so, some of the local players, we put together a team. So that allows us to share information. That means you can do a tenth of the work and get 10 times as much knowledge because, you know, you got other players, you know, doing what you can't do, you know, when you're busy. And just general use of time, much better use of Magic Online. I never used to play Magic Online. I've been playing that a lot more recently. Really allows you to test yourself against very, very high skill level players. And something I've been doing since really the start of this year is, just focusing on whatever the next tournament is. So if my next Grand Prix is limited, like now, Turin, end of this month, I am just going to be playing limited. No standard, no modern, nothing else. Just dial it down, zone in, and just drill down on that one thing at a time. Because that I don't have the time with a full-time job to do anything else, really.
You know what? It's fascinating to me how themes pop up or like ideas kind of develop or whatever. And I'm bringing this up because just a few episodes ago, our guest shared the exact same thing. He's like, hey, I look at my next event. If it's modern, for example, I only read modern articles. I only, you know, focus on that or whatever. And it's so funny because I've been doing this podcast for a couple of years and no one's really ever mentioned that before. Now, here we are, two people within 3 or 4 interviews of each other say the same thing. I think that's really powerful to just say, hey, you know what? Magic's not going anywhere. I'm not going to miss out if I don't read the standard articles because I'm not playing standard for the next couple of weeks, right? I'm focusing on my next event. So I'm just going to do limited. I'm just going to, you know, focus on that. And then, you know, after that limited event's done, then I'll go and see what's going on with standard or modern or whatever. So I think that's really cool how you can just focus in on that one thing and you're not worse off because of it, you know?
Exactly. And I think once you build up that initial general base of knowledge, then you can just fall back on stuff. You know, when I was starting out, I would read all the articles of all the things, even formats I wouldn't play, like Legacy. I had no Legacy, just to learn about the game. But once you've got that base knowledge, just focus on what you're concentrating on and then pull back on your fundamentals when it's time to go to the next format.
Yeah, I think that's great because then it also helps remove the overwhelm of, oh, there's so much out there. How do I keep up? You know, because it's just, Channel Fireball and Star City Games put out great stuff. But if you try to read it all, it's just so much. But you say, hey, I'm only going to look at the next format. And then it really kind of helps narrow in your focus. So I think that's great. Great advice.
Absolutely.
Cool, man.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of the early challenge or challenges that you're facing, how you overcome them. And I love pointing those out because, you know, prodigies can be like, hey, I struggle with that too, and here's how we can overcome that. So that's pretty cool. But now I want to get into GP Barcelona and talk about that. Let's start before then. I would love to hear your preparation process and dive into what that looked like. So it was a modern event, right? You played Boris Byrne. So how far in advance did you choose your deck? What were you doing? How did you scope out the situation? Let's rewind to before the Grand Prix and tell us what that era looked like.
Okay, so how far in advance did I choose my deck? Let's say, I don't know, 2 years. I just play Burn, right? That's my thing. So that part was easy.
You're one of those players that, hey, no matter what, I'm playing Boros Burn. I don't care what the field is like. I'm going to a modern GP, and I'm just playing what I know.
Yeah, I will dabble. You know, I've borrowed friends' decks. Let's take Affinity for a spin. Let's take Grixis Death Shadow for a spin. But unless I'm blown away, these cards are expensive to own in paper. So if you can win with just one thing, and just come back to it time and time again, especially when it's not one of those decks that can be easily hated, like Affinity or Dredge, that are very specific hate cards. You know, something like Burn is generic enough that, you know, it's always going to be tier 1, tier 1.5. But, you know, it's always fine, at least, I think.
All right, cool. So you did play with other stuff to kind of get to know them, and you've been playing with this deck for a while, so you have an idea of what the matchups are like, but you have Boros Burn, that's what you're going to do. And so now getting closer to the event, did you look at the meta at all, or you just showed up? Like, what some of the other preparation that you did?
So my last time I probably touched this deck in paper is February for Grand Prix Lyon. I think I finished 10-5, which is fine. So there's been a few new decks come out since then, or popularized since then. We have this Clark Clan Ironworks deck. We have this Black Red Hollow One deck. We have the Mardu Pyromancer deck in the last 6 months or so. And humans, of course, has been popularized as well. So I already had about a 36 matchup sideboard guide, which is basically limited to that number because that's all I could fit on one page. You know, you could go to 100 in modern, but I just, you know, tidied that up, got rid of some matchups I didn't think I would ever play, like 8-rack and stuff. Made space for the ones I've mentioned. Thought about it a little bit. Reread some old articles. Played a few leagues online. Just really got back in the saddle, really, of playing that deck and playing the format in general.
All right, so you kind of touched on something just really casually, but this sideboard guide, 36 matchups over there. So that sounds like something you've been working on for a while, but like it's really useful. So tell us what's on there. How did you make it? What purpose does it serve?
Yeah. So I initially think I based it on a really great article on the website Red Deck Winning, I think it's called. Cool. And the article is called The Modern Burn Bible. And it came out in about the time I started to play the deck and bought the deck in 2016. You know, it wasn't quite that many matchups it went into depth about. And it was a little different at the time. I think this is back when main deck Wild Nacatl and Atarka's Command was a thing. But it sort of went from there. You know, I've just been developing it as I test, as I speak to friends, as I, you know, go to events and gain feedback, adding matchups, you know, play draw plans, you know, little things like that. So, yeah, we got 36, you know, matchups, all the main ones. Sometimes you lump things together to save space. You know, like I've just got Zoo, all types, for example. But yeah, you know, it just means your head is free during the event. You don't have to carry this information. You've got it there just to refer back to. And some of this I do remember off the top of my head, but, you know, I don't have to. It's there. It's in paper. I can just refer to it. It's so easy.
And so is it strictly just cards out, cards in, or is there kind of like a explanation as to, you know, why, so you kind of understand, or is that the part that's kind of in your head, the concept behind these changes?
So because there are so many matchups, and for a lot of them the play draw is different, it is just space for in and out, basically, and the name of the matchup. The why is something that exactly as you said, Sean, that I kind of intrinsically know, and of course, you know, if you make one of these things, or even more so, if you copy one of these things off the internet, because, you know, people do put them out there, understanding the reasons why behind it and, you know, sometimes knowing when to deviate from it is quite important, I think. But that definitely comes with experience.
Yeah, and that's definitely where I was going, is that when people just copy these things, you know, you can take stuff out, put stuff in, but I think it's really important. Because I've been there. I just copy sideboard guys, and I'm like, okay, I'm playing this matchup. I'll just swap out these cards, but I don't know why, right? And so I think that why is really important, so you know, oh, hey, because in this matchup, they are probably going to side like this against me, which means I should side like this against them. How do you get to that point? Is that you know, just rote repetition? Are you talking with people? Like, how do you build up that knowledge of a format?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, really, yes. So having played the matchup, you know, a handful of times definitely helps. Speaking to friends, especially players who play that deck, you know, either play the same deck as you or play the enemy deck, as it were, and can give you feedback. Try and find out what they're bringing in against you, because, you know, the landscape of game one and game two is completely different. You know, but maybe not so much in modern. Decks are a bit more linear, but you're playing against cards that just were not there in the first game. So, yeah, you have to think ahead to game two and game three, if there is a game three. And because it's so fast as well, this format, you know, the play draw, I think there is, you know, I would say at least three quarters of the matchups, the draw and play, the different cards coming in and out. Well, different quantities of the same cards and so on to manage your mana cost and the, you know, that sort of stuff.
Love it. Yeah, this is great because I love, for better or worse, like breaking down things into like repeatable tasks or whatever. So this is really cool because now it's like, hey, if we're approaching, in this particular case, like a modern event, and yes. You know, you have some experience with modern in the past, and even if you don't, rather, you can start building this stuff up, you know, over time or whatever. So, you know, you had this deck and you had this guy that you've been working on, and you know, you brought it out, and like you said, there had been some changes. So now I want to dive into that. So you said, all right, so now I'm going to this modern event. It's been a couple of months since I played modern, and you looked out and you saw, hey, there's some of these other, there's some new decks that have popped up, and you rattled them off a little earlier.
Yes.
What did you do about that? Like, so how did you, you know, yeah, what were you looking for that informed your, you know, was there any main board changes or sideboard changes based on this new information? How did you, yeah, what were you looking for? How did you assimilate this new information to your game plan?
Yes, sure. So a lot of the basics of it I got from a more recent article on MTG Mint Card, I think, by Yanwing Chun, who's another well-known red and aggressive deck player. However, his total list wasn't quite the same to mine, so I had to obviously make accommodations. I was very happy with my general 75, and in fact, I don't think I changed a single card since the last Grand Prix 6 months ago.
Incredible.
What I did with the cards, if that makes
sense. Yeah, yeah, how to apply them. That's really
cool. Yeah, I mean, if you look at my list, it you know, friends have commented, it is very clean. It's just four of everything except for the lands in the main deck. And the cards I like best in the sideboard, you know, I've grown accustomed to using. You know, that's not to say that won't change in the future, but it's just about adapting new plans and speaking through with friends and making these new matchups work in my head.
And one thing I want to point out, twice now you've mentioned, you know, either red deck winning or reading an article from somebody who's a known, you know, again, aggressive player or whatever. And so tapping into that sub community, I guess, of whatever Magic play style, right? So if you're like an Abzan lover, for example, you find those people who that's all they play, right? Or Merfolk, right? You can find players who that's all they play, and so you can follow them, you can watch their streams, you can read their articles, you can find, you know, and so within Magic, obviously, there you can focus in on your one format, and then even beyond that, you can focus in on your deck or archetype and really get to learn, hey, what are these pros, what are these other, you know, experts saying about these matchups? Like, and that's how you got up to speed on, you know, the new changes. And then you ran the same deck, but then you were able to, you know, apply the cards that you've already had in a new way to do well at the event.
Exactly that. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head.
That's really cool. Man, I love that. So, all right, so now we come up to the Grand Prix and you registered 75. Any highlights from day? Well, first of all, did you have any buys?
Yes, two buys, okay, so that helps.
And how did you get those?
Planeswalker points.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I have had those for a few years now.
So just going to events and just regularly playing, being a Magic player, and just, you know, keep on going.
Being a Magic player, just playing Magic, exactly.
All right, so any highlights from day one? Like, when did you lock in day two? Was that pretty early on, or was it like the last round? Like, when did that happen?
No, well, so 8-0 on day one, so I guess after round six.
Nice and done. Yeah.
So, I mean, highlights, I'm just looking back now over who I played so I can remind myself. So, beat Affinity round one, that's nice. That's sometimes a tough matchup. Some notable players played against, I think, probably highlight on that is round five, Jean-Emmanuel Desprats, who's a French gold pro. I think he was in top eight of one of the last year's Pro Tours, I think.
Yeah, he's a past guest of the show, actually. He's
I imagine you probably have had him on at some point. Really nice guy. He was playing a four-color Death Shadow build. Nice three-game set against him, so that was nice to eke that out against him. Just some tight play towards the end. There was round eight in particular was kind of a clutch victory. I was playing against Humans, a local Spanish player, quite a nice guy called Alberto. And we're in game three. I think he's got me under pressure with these big, humans that grow, the champions and the lieutenants. Mm-hmm. And I've got the option to play an Eidolon, or I just draw for the turn a Deflecting Palm, which I've sideboarded in. So I thought, actually, I was going to play the Eidolon, but you know what? He's got some big stuff. I'm going to hold up this Deflecting Palm. So he has a great turn. He goes, he's already got a great board, and then he goes, Mantis Rider into Phantasmal Image to make another Mantis Rider, and all of a sudden he's attacking me for about 17. I'm kind of glad I held up this Deflecting Palm now. So this Champion of the Parish, this 7/7 here, no damage from him, please. You take 7. That puts you to 2. Mm-hmm. And obviously he died on the crackback. So, I think I would have done the same in his position, but, it's drawing those sideboard cards. So that was kind of nice, game that could have gone either way.
Yeah. That's exciting. So, that's cool. So, like you said, and you had a decision to make, and you made one, and it was a good one, and off you went. Yeah. And you said 8-0 on the first day?
Yeah, 8-0. Nice. First 8-0. So that was really nice. Got the photo up there and everything. Really happy with how I played on day one. That was great. That was really nice.
So then, as far as day two goes, when did you lock in top eight?
Well, right at the end, actually.
Okay.
So round nine, I see I'm against the one and only Javier Dominguez.
Oh, my gosh. That's so funny.
Not round nine, of course. But so he's obviously a very good player. And I told myself I wouldn't be nervous, but I think I played too carefully. If anyone's listening who plays Burn and has only just started, my one piece of advice would be you should not play carefully. You need to put caution to the wind. You're the aggressive player in 99% of matchups. Playing carefully and running scared will get you killed. And that's exactly what happened. He took me down. So that was the untarnished record done with. Then we had some more wins.
Wait, that was what round with Javier?
That was round nine. Right, so round of day
first
two.
One, day two. All right. Play carefully and pay the price.
Too carefully. Not aggressive enough. And he, punished me for that. So that's fine. Couple more rounds back on the winning. That's great. Then played against a nice gentleman who also made the top eight called Laszlo, playing blue white control. These bills.
He was actually last week's episode.
You had him on?
Yeah, we just had him on last week, right before your episode came out.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, no, really nice guy. Really enjoyed meeting him. Obviously, saw him again later in the day. And he was playing this. I'm sure he told you he just picked up the deck like less than a week before. Mm-hmm. Was thinking about cutting the main deck timely reinforcements, but luckily for him in this match, he didn't. Because he played that, gained 6, but then snapcasted it, gained another 6. So I think I dealt him 24 in game one, but that wasn't enough. So lost to him. So now I'm kind of on the bubble for top 8. So, okay, just keep playing Magic. We're doing well still. This is fine.
Yeah.
So another win, round 14, I get paired against French. He's a silver pro, maybe gold, a chap called Guillaume Pelbet, who I've played before actually in Limited. He beat me that time, so I was looking forward to avenge myself. not a really tight, close game against he was playing Affinity, which, as I mentioned before, is a really tight, close matchup. And I think they're slightly favored, actually. They got some lifelinkers and things, which are troublesome. And actually, I want to mention something here, because I mentioned earlier this Red Deck Winning article that I'd mentioned before. And I went back and read that. And although it's a two-year-old article, you know, something like Affinity has not changed in 2 years, and neither has Burn, really. So there was something, a specific line the author had put in that, and I forget the author's name, but it was when they have the Bolt Scourge and they're just nugging you for one a turn but gaining one back, you can ignore that. You know, and previously I've been killing it on sight because it's a source of lifelink, but I took the advice of this article. I let it hit me maybe three times, maximized my own game plan, and you know, was able to win the damage race. So, you know, it's great reading these old articles and still picking up new nuggets of information. So that was really cool, actually, I thought.
That is cool.
So now we're on, right? So we're X and two after round 14. And we're looking at the tie, and then the standings aren't going to go up before the pairings. How do we know? You know, we know my tiebreakers are good. You know, Javier's just on a tear. And this Laszlo guy obviously was winning as well. So, you know, my tiebreakers were great. And I think we found out afterwards I definitely could have ID'd, but my round 15 opponent could not, I don't think. And that was none other than the great Even Flock, I'm sure you're aware of. I don't know if he's ever been on the show, but a really nice guy, I must say. One of the nicest opponents I've ever had. So we're obviously playing for top eight, and he's on this new Krark Clan Ironworks deck. I think the first and only time I faced it this tournament, so I'm glad I did some prep. So game one, I think I win the die roll, which is great, obviously. Managed to clutch that game. And game two, I look at my opening hand, and I see it has, I don't know how, you know, familiar you are with their archetype, but, you know, graveyard-based artifact deck with lots of spells cast over and over. And I see an opening hand, a Rest in Peace, Eidolon of the Great Revel, two lands, one of which can cast white, and all the rest good cards. And in that moment, I'm thinking, I'm pretty sure I've just made top eight of a Grand Prix.
That sounds pretty solid, yeah.
Yeah. So, and you know, to be fair, it got close. I don't think I played it perfectly. It was going fine until maybe at the end. But, you know, I get the... I made an interesting decision. I played the Rest in Peace before the Eidolon because I noticed he played a Mox Opal, which would give him, on his turn three, if he drew another land, access to four mana for the Krokan Ironworks. So I'm glad I noticed that and didn't think by default, oh, well, it's only been his turn two, so he can't cast the Ironworks next time. You know, I checked. I was careful. Mm-hmm. Played the Rest in Peace first. So that's any graveyard shenanigans out of the way. Then we played the Eidolon. Managed to draw a second Eidolon, play that. So we're nugging him with a two. He's got a Scrap Heap Trawler, which is, you know, just a 3/2 for three at this point. Scrap Trawler, sorry. Then he goes, okay, sack my stuff to Krark Clan Ironworks that I played before you got stuff down, and play a Wyrmcrawl Engine. Okay, now we're in trouble, possibly. You know, game six is a real problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just had all the stuff. I had Destructive Revelry. I had Ancient Grudge. It was just my day. Mm-hmm. I had the stuff. You know, it wasn't his day. So, yeah, there we go. We got it. Two games.
Wow.
So,
there you go.
There you go. Mm. So 13-2. You know, best result by far for me.
And so have you made day two of Grand Prix before?
Yes, I think this is the seventh individual one. Maybe one or two team ones as well. This is, to give you a bit of context, this is in about 20 or so Grand Prix. Okay. So it's about half, I think. Cool. So no stranger to day two, but you know, not such high low table numbers as this.
So, oh, and by the way, I don't know what happened, but I started hearing an echo on, there we go. Whatever you just did, fix it. Okay, we're good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so what does it take, if you can remember way back in the day before you were a day two player, what does it take to make day two of a Grand Prix?
Well, yeah. Okay, great question. And that what that means has changed a lot in the time I've been doing it, because it was 7-2, then it was 6-3, and now it's 6-2 again. So I think it's just taking into account a lot of the things we've said and that you'll hear from other experienced players is just, you know, practice your deck, you know, practice the format, speak to people, and just play each game and match as it comes. That was really my motto internally all weekend at Barcelona, is just play the next match. Forget what record we're on. You know, doesn't matter that we're 8-0, you know. Doesn't matter who the opponent is. And that is hard to do. You know, the Javier example is tough. But don't be intimidated by better players, because you will face them. You're only going to learn from them. You might win, you might lose. That's just magic. Just take each game as it comes, and don't try and get too clever like I did against Javier. Just use what you've learned and just stay focused, I think.
Yeah, I was definitely going to ask about that as you were kind of marching through day two. You know, you had those two losses early, and so you're like, "Oh, I'm on the bubble for top eight." I was going to ask, what did you do? Like, how did you? Because you know, we've heard just focus on the next match and stuff like that. Yeah. And for you, that was a very real thing, because like, I'm sure you got all psyched out. Oh, if I lose another one, I'm not going to be all this stuff. So what did you do? Like, how did you just? Hey, I'm just playing this next match. It doesn't matter what my result has been. How do you do that, Nick?
Well, so, you know, I try and do this anyway, and Barcelona was especially a good example of this. So just getting into routine, I knew whatever I'd done on day one was perfect. You know, a flawless record, you know, maybe some lucky die rolls and cards, you know, cards off the top, but my headspace was great. So I had exactly the same thing for breakfast. I had exactly the same thing for lunch at the same time I had lunch. I just did everything the same. You know, I got into a routine, and, you know, it's something I'm very hard on, is just be comfortable. You want to be comfortable at the table. You know, you want to stay hydrated. You know, this is Barcelona in July. You know, this is hot. So, you know, you need to stay, you know, drink the water. But just stay focused and just be comfortable and just. You know, just play the games of magic, I think.
I love that. That's cool. All right. So then, now that you've done it, what do you feel it took to get from a day two player into the top eight? Because you've done day twos before. And so you just kind of recap, hey, here's what you got to do to make the day two. And then you've done, you know, day two for a while now. So now, boom, top eight. So do you feel, was there a difference? What did you notice? What does it take to go from day two to top eight?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit of a difference. So I sort of knew going into this event that, well, you know, I think anyone going into an event wants to do well, but I knew that it was my goal to do well. I had a reasonable finish with the same deck in a not too different modern landscape earlier in the year. I wanted to improve on that. So I was looking for 11-4 or better, really, was my goal, to beat the 10-5 from last time. Mm-hmm. So that I thought was a reasonable goal to achieve. And like I say, I was, you know, just stayed focused, didn't get, you know, sidetracked. I made sure I slept well. I made sure I was eating well. I made sure I was hydrated throughout the day. But I think it was just a determination and strength of mind, just not to get sidetracked by silly things that don't matter. And, you know, that may not come as easily for somebody who hasn't played 20 plus Grand Prix. You know, I've had a lot of, you know, 5-4s and whatever, you know, before this. So I think it's just experience, really, and just drawing on that and staying in the zone.
Excellent. Man, that's really cool. So tell us a little bit about the top eight then. How did those matches go?
I'm a little bit disappointed with the top eight. So I played against another French guy, Maxence Duroy. He was playing what I thought was a particularly aggressive version of Grixis Death Shadow. You know, we get the lists in the top eight, so I could see his list. Now, I don't think that's a bad matchup. I think that is slightly favorable for Burn, particularly the way he had built it. I think it was a fine matchup for me. So we played game one. That went fine. I'm on the play because I'm third seed. He's sixth, I think. So, you know, that is often the decider in that matchup if both players draw normal hands. But I'm kind of a little upset with myself. You know, when I played against Even Flock the round before, in round 15, you know, I was super careful. I checked everything with the judge. I was very calm. I was very slow. This one, you know, I didn't ask to look at his deck list again between sideboarding, which I think I should have done. Mm-hmm. I kept what I think is a very mediocre hand in game two. You know, made the classic mistake of thinking, oh, well, you know, we're a game up here. And I think also facing the other way, so facing away from the rail where the spectators are and having them behind me, being able to see me and scrutinize me, I think really threw me off.
Really?
I mean, this is the first, and this is only text coverage. You know, there's no cameras here, but, you know, this is the first time I've been on a Grand Prix feature match. Mm-hmm. Well, twice that weekend. And I think having my back to the spectators and letting them see me really threw me off because it's something I was uncomfortable. You know, I'm comfortable with my deck and I'm comfortable with the format, but I'm not. I didn't feel comfortable being watched. And I think much like I mentioned against Javier, I kept a cautious hand. I thought, oh, this is a functional seven. It's got a few too many lands, but it's got it's got a deflecting palm, which is high impact sideboard card. But I was really impressed with the rest of the tournament, how disciplined I was for, nope, this hand isn't good enough. We're going back. We're going to find something. We're going to find a better hand than this. Mm-hmm. And I just let it go a bit. I think making the Pro Tour ready, we've done it now. But actually, there's three really important matches still to come, and I kind of threw that one away, I think.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting, kind of looking back and taking it all in. And that's good that you've analyzed and thought about what it was that stumbled you. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, so you can't do anything about, you know, spectator and stuff like that. So what are you going to do in the future when you're, is it just now having done that, you're a little more used to it, kind of like going to Grand Prix for first time or whatever, and you just kind of get over that? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's it. That is definitely, a consideration. You know, having really done that for the first time, and it's something I do struggle with, is, you know, particularly when there's players, you know, other players or spectators being loud around me, or I feel like they're watching me, I do struggle a bit. And I think that's, for someone who's not used to being on feature, that's going to be normal for a large subset of the Magic community, I think. I wouldn't be surprised anyway. So, but the more it happens, the more I'll get used to it. It's just a new situation. You know, I've done it now a couple of times. Cool. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to do it more, and it'll just become normal and fade into the background, and it won't be a problem anymore.
Yeah. So what was your final standing?
Final standing, including the quarterfinals, was 13-3. 13-2 and a quarterfinals loss.
There you go. And so what place did you get?
Well, third after Swiss and top finishing quarterfinalist, so therefore fifth.
Okay, fifth. Very cool. Nice. Okay. Wow, not bad. So how many pro points did you get?
So four from that one, and at least three later on from Atlanta. That's seven, plus the one I had from before. So that's eight. So we're a couple shy of bronze now.
Almost, almost.
So I'm just going to be loading up on the Grand Prix and trying to get those last 2 points and beyond, I guess.
Very cool. Very cool. And obviously, so Juhi Barcelona qualified you for, you know, a Pro Tour. Was that your first Pro Tour then?
It will be my first Pro Tour, yes. Very excited. You know, this has been a four-year dream, which has finally been realized. So, ecstatic, really. Players who were watching said I didn't seem to express much emotion after beating even Flock. But it's really just more out of respect for him. We'd had some good games, and he was such a nice guy, and I didn't want to rub anything in his face. But you know, once it kind of sunk in a couple of days later, this is it. We're going to the Pro Tour now.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, man, there you go. And that's exciting. So what are you going to do to prepare? How do you plan to prepare for your first Pro Tour?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's difficult. Obviously I'm kind of in this rogue, list of people who aren't on a professional testing team. So, what I will probably do is reach out to some of the other players in the same boat as me. I know your past guest of yours, Matt Brown, I think, reached out to me, the Sunday of the GP and said, oh, that's cool. Let's we work together for Atlanta and so on.
Cool.
And there will be other players like that. I mean, UK Magic has just exploded this year. I mean, if you look at the European Grand Prix, I think it's all but one has had a UK player in the top eight, which is probably more than the last 10 years combined. Cool. It's nuts. So there are these players. I can speak to them and just try and collaborate and gain from knowledge from people who actually have been to the Pro Tour before.
Yeah, love it. Yeah, it's so fun. It's so fun to see, that journey into, do a microscope on, some of the important events and stuff like that. And so speaking of, journey and the ups and downs that you've had in your Magic, career, what would you say has been your worst Magic moment? And what did you learn from that experience?
Worst. I mean, I try not to dwell on the negatives. I try and learn something from every situation. I think I've had some pretty terrible results at RPTQs and things.
So then what has been one of the biggest lessons learned then that stands
out? Yeah. I think it's when you're taking a step up into, maybe it's your first day two or your first RPTQ or even just your first, PPTQ or FNM, whatever, your first something more than what you've done before and stepping out of your comfort zone, which is great to do. You probably will lose a lot. I think I went 2-5 at my first RPDQ with this same deck, probably the same 75. But you just take your lumps. I'm not one of these players who drops from tournaments. I mm-hmm. value the experience very highly. And I would, if for any of your listeners who are looking to get better, one piece of advice I would give is, you've paid the entry for the tournament, you're probably here for the day, just play all the rounds. You're going to gain experience about the format, about your deck, just have fun with it. You're out of contention. You can, don't sweat about it anymore. Just have fun and learn something. So, that's probably the advice I'd give. Yes, you're going to lose a lot in a situation you're uncomfortable with. Maybe for me that was recently the playing on feature maps with people watching. But just try and have fun and learn from it, I think.
Love it. And then, obviously, flip side to the lows or the highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be this Grand Prix Top 8 on an individual level. Beating some really outstanding players, both established pros and other great players who are up and coming, in this tournament. So that's a massive breakthrough. But there are other things I'm proud of, bringing together local, people in the Magic community around me and, forming a team and talking and, just trying to work together. These are all great, great things as well that I think I can be proud of.
Cool. And on your journey, what has been the biggest mistake that you see players make?
I think one which I'd like to reiterate, I'll mention two if I may. One I'd like to reiterate is letting things that you can't control get the better of you. So that's the perceived notion that the other player is better than you. I don't like the notion of better or worse in Magic. I like to use more or less experience. I think that's a nice way to think about it. But things like that and outside distractions, get the better of you. So exactly what I mentioned, you're playing too carefully when that's not how your matchup should be played, especially when you know better. You just got to stick to your A plan. And another thing I'll mention, which I guess is kind of related, and I can link this specifically to Burn as an example, is I see a lot of players, particularly when they play Burn, but in other things, they're drumming their fingers and they're counting and they're doing the maths and they're thinking and they're racking their brains and they're going mad. And I think you want to get to a level where that is going to tax you. You want to get to a level where you can play almost on instinct. You know, when I play Burn or when I play, Game of Limited and there's attacking and blocking, I don't try and count what the number is to get them down to zero. I just try and maximize the damage without wasting my resources. And I want to get them past beyond zero. I want to get them to minus 100 if I can, but just do it without compromising my game. So don't worry too that would be the piece of advice from that. Don't worry too much about the exact maths of how you're going to get your opponent to zero. Just play tight Magic, and if you're playing an aggressive deck, maximize your damage output without wasting resources and maintain your tempo. And, you don't need to worry about counting the specific numbers of, in three turns they're going to be on this life. Just let your brain figure it out, behind the scenes, in subconscious.
Love that. Really cool. And what have you learned from Magic, Nick, that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Yeah, that's a great question. Lots of things, I think. It's discipline, it's hard work paying off, and this recent result is a great example of that. I've put so much into this game for the last 4 years or so and really ramped that up hard. And what's just happened for me is an example. If you stick at something and try hard enough, then, you probably will get the results that, should be coming to you. Mm-hmm. It's emphasized working together, collaborations, building friendships and sharing information, making best use of time. There's so many things you can take away from Magic to other walks of life, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. Here at MTG Pro Tutor, we are fascinated with the interconnectivity of Magic and life. Mm. And so how does becoming a better Magic player make you a better person?
Well, I think one thing, certainly when you're starting out, it can temper your protect you mentally against things like losses, small setbacks in life. It's a fact of Magic, black and white. You are going to win some, you are going to lose some. And coming to that acceptance and stopping worrying about it and just accepting that fact and enjoying the game for what it is a nice metaphor for life. There are going to be lumps, there are going to be setbacks, but just enjoy the ride you're on. Do the best you can. If things aren't the way you are right now, work harder, and you will probably one day, if you work hard enough, get where you want to be.
I love it. It's so true. Like the pillars that this podcast stands on are sportsmanship, dedication, and respect. And Absolutely. It's so cool to see when those attributes are, fostered as a Magic player, how those Yes. help you in lots of, areas of life, like you said. And I love how Magic is a microcosm of life, like you were alluding to. Just like the situation that you bump into, every time I face this particular challenge, I have to find a new way to solve it. So then in life, when you bump into a challenge that you keep bumping into, it's like, okay, well, what can I do differently to overcome it? I just love the parallels and what we can learn and how as we practice, patience, as we practice working through disappointment, right? Because we get to experience that in the course of a night playing Magic or whatever, then we're able to tote those skills over to life. And when something disappointing happens, we can, you know, hopefully, you know, react in a more even keeled manner than maybe we would have without being, you know, without having the magic experience that we do. So I think it's cool.
Exactly. Totally agree with that. Perfect.
Love it. Man, it's been a lot of fun. So it's fun to hear, you know, where you came from, your humble beginnings from French cars that you couldn't read all the way up to, you know, top eight of Grand Prix and headed to your first pro tour. That's really neat. And love, you know, tapping into some of the resources. You mentioned the Red Jack Winning article that you read and just kind of staying tuned to, you know, players and people who play your archetype. That's really neat. And breaking down your Grand Prix experience. I love that. And especially the preparation phase. I love that. When you talked about your cyborg guide and understanding the why and how to receive new information and adjust it from there. And it's just been really cool to learn and to grow. And man, I wish you the best of luck on your upcoming events. What are your upcoming events? We'd love to cheer on past guests. And so you mentioned one before, but tell us what else you have coming up.
Yeah, so all the European GPs now, I think, you know, I can probably be close enough to let go of the PPTQs now and just go all in on these last two pro points. So we've got Turin Limited end of this month. We've got Russell's Standard early next month. We've got UK Nationals, English Nationals, not UK, next month, which is, they're always a blast. I love those tournaments. And there's just there's so many more. I think there's about five before the Pro Tour, five GPs I can attend. So two Pro points at any one of them, or one across two of them, will mean you know, I'm ready for the next RPTQ without having to play any PPTQ. So I think there's about five. Love you know, all across Europe.
Man, well, good luck on those upcoming events for sure.
Thank you so much.
I want to remind the prodigies out there, you want to connect with Nick, you find him on Twitter at Nick Yeah Man, and hit him up there. So thanks for being on the show or ask him a question. That's where you can find him. And Nick, as we close things up, what is a final piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
Yep. So just to reiterate what we said, I think just focus on your games, use the knowledge you've got. Don't worry about things. They're outside of your control. You know, once you're in the game, just play to the best of your ability and, you know, let the cards do the work.
Well, Nick, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences and for helping us learn and grow. You are a hero among Planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you so much, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Nick, thank you so much for being our guest here at episode 295. Prodigies, of course, you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/Nick Waugh. That's W-A-U-G-H, Nick Waugh. And yeah, you can get a synopsis of what we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. And I do want to remind you to share your opinion with me on what's holding you back from the Pro Tour. When it comes to qualifying for the Pro Tour, what's the single biggest challenge that you are facing right now? You can do that over at mtgpro2.com/opinion. Go over there to share your opinion, and that way it keeps it all in one spot. I can go through your responses and see what the common themes are, and that will really help me guide the content that we release here at MTG Pro Tutor. All forms of content, including the questions that I ask here on the podcast to our great guests, the content we put out in the newsletter, the articles we put out on the website, any products or offerings that we may put together in the future, I want to make sure that they are dialed in and focused specifically on what you are struggling with as a Magic player right now. So share your opinion at mtgpro2.com/opinion. And again, that is for you serious grinders out there trying to make it to the Pro Tour. When it comes to qualifying for the Pro Tour, what is the single biggest challenge, frustration, or obstacle you are facing right now? So thank you so much for going over there and sharing your opinion with me. A few more thank yous. Of course, the biggest one goes to the patrons. You mean the world to me, and you keep the show going. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And of course, our proud sponsor, Paragon City Games, over at ParagonCityGames.com. They provide the prize support for our Patreon-exclusive giveaways each and every month, as well as the prize for the Prodigy Sealed League that we do each and every set. And now that M19 is here upon us, we will be kicking off the Prodigy Sealed League for M19 in a couple weeks, once I get back from my trip that I'm taking with my wife. That said, to clue you in on what's going on, I will be out of country for the next couple weeks. My wife and I are celebrating our 10-year anniversary. While we got married in November, we're taking the trip here in the summer before school starts and all that stuff, and we're going to go to Germany. So that should be a lot of fun. Cannot wait to just explore that beautiful country with my wife. That said, for the next 2 weeks, we are going to be doing throwback episodes, or best ofs, because it occurred to me that with the show being more than 3 years old, there are several of you Prodigies who probably have not gone back into the archives and listened to the great interviews that we had way back in the day. So I'm actually going to run back the first two ever episodes. So stay tuned over the next couple weeks. You're going to hear a very raw, inexperienced on the mic, Sean Penrod. So please bear with me. But the guests are amazing. They are names that you will recognize, and you will definitely want to hear what they have to say. Well, that about wraps things up here for episode 295. I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.